Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to today's Ask Mom RN show. This is your host, Tamara Walker, otherwise known as Mom RN. Very glad to have you join us today on Monday, October 19th, 2009. I'm looking forward to sharing with you. And we have a guest today that will be talking on backpack safety for our kids and sports safety and preventing sports injuries and what to do if your child does get a sports injury. And the gentleman we'll be speaking with is Dr. Raj. His full name is Dr. Bal Rajagopalam. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, but we'll bring him on in just a moment. And ANBKNEE.com. and he is a board-certified orthopedic surgeon. He's also a physician and CEO of the Beverly Hills Orthopedic Institute and has offices in Beverly Hills and Los Angeles. Well-known in that area, I'm sure, and has been on many different talk shows and sharing his expertise in orthopedic surgery. So I'm looking forward to having him on. We were supposed to have him on last week, and we had a miscommunication on the time for the show because we're in different time zones. And I apologize to him for that, and I'm very thankful that he was available and able to be here today. And when we first tried to have him back in, I think it was August or July, I think we originally had scheduled him, I had to cancel the show due to having to attend a funeral. So hopefully the third time is a charm, and I have been looking forward to talking with him. So we're going to go ahead and bring him on in just a moment. If you have questions, if you would like to call in, the number is 347-945-7957. Again, that number is 347-945-7957 if you have questions for Dr. Raj. We'd love to have you call in. Be sure that when you do call in that after the recording prompts you, press 1, and that will allow my producer to know that you would like to be brought on the air, and we will get you on ASAP. So we're going to bring on Dr. Raj. Hello, and welcome to the Ask Mom RN show.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Good. So we finally connect.
Yes, well, third time's a charm, I hope.
Well, I'm doing well. This is a very interesting topic today. I mean, having a small daughter getting ready to go to even preschool, it's a topic of huge significance because I know myself I had a lot of issue with back and shoulder pain because I tried to be the cooler kid on the block who carried the single strap or tried to carry as much weight as possible and not complain.
Well, and that's something I see a lot of. I have a son who's a freshman in high school, and when I drop him off at school in the mornings, I do see the majority of students that are carrying backpacks have them draped over one shoulder. And that just looks like, you know, they're usually loaded down, and it looks like it, not only could it be painful, but that it could cause them some injury. So would you talk about what that can do to the skeletal system and why kids should carry their backpack on both shoulders?
Well, first of all, I mean, that one shoulder strap or even that strap that goes across your chest is kind of the, you know, I'm far from being a child, but I know from watching kids, that's the cool bag to wear because it's strapped over your chest. It looks good. So first of all, a lot of kids want to, you know, try and fit in. I mean, but biomechanically, it's not the proper way to go. I mean, first of all of the weight is being dissipated through that one strap over that one shoulder. So you're bound to have shoulder issues and shoulder, you know, pain, which can lead to future issues if this persists. You know, in terms of your, you know, the most biomechanically best backpack is the one with two straps, which takes the forces and dissipates it over a greater area, essentially over both shoulders. And even better than that is a backpack that has wheels. So in case you're carrying it and you get tired, you can just put it on the ground and just wheel it. So, I mean, first of all, to summarize it, two straps are better than one. Second thing is, you know, kids should not be embarrassed to have wheels, especially with the fact that this weight can be fairly significant carrying all your books on a daily basis. I mean, you're talking about 8 hours a day on the bus, on and off, and then carrying it. And these straps should also be much thicker, because if they're bigger, they also dissipate the forces over a greater surface area. So, you know, and children in general should not carry greater than 20% of their body weight. in these backpacks.
Well, it does seem that they do get very overloaded. I know that my son sometimes has three or four textbooks in addition to his binder and folders and notebooks, everything that, you know, he's having to lug around. So, do you have any recommendations on kind of distributing that weight throughout the backpack? Should we look for one with a lot of compartments? Does that help? Or, you know, should they carry the majority of the weight close to the body? Or, you know, what are some ways to prevent them from straining their back carrying all of that weight?
Well, in general, you know, the compartment, it's the whole weight that matters. So the more compartments, really, I don't know if it makes a huge difference. But what does make a difference is, number one, having those straps as not just in, you know, 1-inch straps, but having like the 2-inch or 2.5-inch straps, which are padded. Because as a strap, you know, drapes over your shoulder, you're not putting all of this force over one area of your shoulder or one muscle area. It's being dissipated over a greater area. And, you know, essentially is Wolf's Law. I mean, Wolf's Law is essentially forces, our body accommodates better by dissipating forces over a greater area. And that's why when we have, you know, off the topic, when we have arthritic joints, we form extra bone because we've lost our cushion to dissipate the forces of walking over a greater area. It is very important for kids also to realize that, you know, if, you know, it's not about being cool. It's not about being, you know, carrying as much as you can or not complaining. It's about protecting yourself in the future, because not only at this phase are we developing our minds, we are developing ourselves physically. So if you start, you know, carrying heavy bags and overloading your shoulder or your back and start having back pain, you know, it's not going to cause issues like scoliosis. That's a misnomer. You know, it's not going to mechanically change us. But what it will is it'll start a cascade of pain in a certain area, and this cascade of pain will then lead on to, you know, lack of desire to do certain activities, you know, and it'll lead on to someone being less active, which is not ideal at that age.
No, it's not, especially, you know, as active as kids are, you don't want them to be in pain while they're trying to go about their daily functions, and then also, you know, if they're wanting to do sports or anything of that nature. And when I was researching this, the reason I had asked about the different compartments and distributing the weight was when I was researching this, I read some different recommendations on, you know, having more compartments and kind of spreading out and distributing it that way, the weight that way. But I'd also read trying to have the heaviest items towards the back of the backpack, which would actually be up against the carrier's back, and having the lighter items up front. So I just wondered how much of a difference that really makes, or if that's necessary.
I think in logistically having a heavier item closest, yeah, to the back, then makes complete sense for stability reasons, number one. So, you know, one thing we have to look at is when kids are carrying these weights, you know, if these weights, if their heaviest item is away from their body, there's more chance of instability. For example, if they're walking and they walk over an unsteady surface and the weight shifts that's away from their body, it's harder to accommodate to that shift than if it's closer to your body. Because essentially, it's just the area and the distance that's involved. You know, second thing we have to take into account is the injuries that can occur. If you're carrying a significant amount of weight, you are walking on unsteady surfaces or going upstairs or downstairs, you're at a risk of falling and hurting yourself. So that in itself should be, you know, I think if children, you know, limit the amount of weight they have to less than 20% of their body weight, or if they're really stuck, use wheels. It would be more ideal and would solve all of these issues.
Well, that's all great information. And I know my son used to use a rolling backpack, and I really loved when he was able to do that because I knew that that would really reduce any risk on him, and plus it just was so much easier to lug everything around. Unfortunately, some of his schools have not allowed those, and I really think schools should make it a policy to allow those, because it really would cut down on how much these children have to carry around on their back.
Well, it's peer pressure too. I mean, you if everyone's walking around with backpacks and you're the only one using wheels,
yes.
You know, it's hard at that phase. We're saying this, we're older, we're past that phase, but you're obviously not going to fit in. But if schools implement rules of such nature, you know, and also educate people regarding backpack safety issues, and then it becomes a greater issue, which supersedes the peer pressure aspect.
I agree. Well, Dr. Raja, I also wanted to talk with you today about sports, and I know that you probably deal with a lot of sports injuries in your practice. So what are some things, and want to start out with, what are some of the common sports injuries from different sports that you see and treat in your practice?
Well, that's a very much an open-ended question. As an orthopedic surgeon, I'm probably the last person you want to see after a sports injury because of the surgery component. But, you know, the most common injuries we do see are back-related, you know, for example, and then in general, it's related to poor core strength, and also poor stretching habits. So during any sort of athletic activity, such as even football or basketball, you know, where you hyperextend or you injure your back by too much lifting, too much force in a specific area, a quick twist, that's extremely common in kids. And how many times do we come home and you hear someone say, oh, my back hurts? I mean, it's even more common in adults. After that, you know, with extremity injuries, I mean, obviously with sports like basketball, which is near and dear to me because I was frequently injured by playing basketball, your knees are very succumb to injuries from the impact, the jumping, the way you land, the twisting with flexing your knee, puts your meniscus, which is your bumper cushion, at increased risk. Sports such as volleyball, again, more issues around your ankles. So when you jump up and you land on it with your ankle inverted, twisted inwards, you can easily twist or even fracture your ankle. And then anything involving balls striking your fingers or hands or hyperextending your arm can also cause injury to your wrists, your shoulders, and your elbows.
Well, I'm very surprised to hear that back injuries are the number one, because I really thought with kids that it would be, that you would see more with the knees and ankles and extremities. So that's surprising news to me, but that makes sense. And when I was a pediatric nurse, I treated a lot of, I took care of a lot of kids who had injured knees, torn ACLs, and things of that nature. And I've seen a lot of fractured ankles and badly sprained ankles and torn ligaments. So it seems, you know, there's so many different things that a child can injure. So wanted to ask you, what are some ways that children when they're playing sports, what are some things that they can do to prevent injuries? And I know there's, you know, several different things across various sports, but what are some things that kind of would be general and apply to all, and what should parents know to help their children to prevent injuries?
Well, I think nowadays one of the biggest issues that's coming about is what the, you know, this is a little bit off the topic, is the new internet phase, and, you know, more and more kids are more and more sedentary. You know, back in my day in the 80s, you know, after coming home, I'd be outside with my friends playing some sort of sports until I was called to get back in.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, it's you have a more sedentary population. So you have kids who are probably more overweight, number one, and less conditioned. And because of this, you are generally more injury prone. So if you take a child who's been, you know, playing sport, on the internet and basically, you know, sedentary, and then suddenly put him into a competitive game of basketball, that child's more prone to injuring himself in multiple different capacities. So, number one, generally, being more active is extremely important. So that starts from just simple walking, encouraging more activity. So your bones respond to impact. They get stronger. Your muscles respond by stabilizing your joints. And that's extremely important. Number two, by being more active, you generally weigh less. And, mm-hmm. you know, your weight's controlled. You're not sedentary. You're not amongst these new age person who is, you know, used to just doing everything via the computer. So that in itself will lead to less injuries too, because you have less forces on your joints, including your back. Number three, before any particular sport, especially with a child who's growing, remember, child grows, your bones grow fairly quickly. Doesn't mean your muscles accommodate to it. Because of your muscles and tendons don't accommodate, they tend to be tight. So stretching is extremely important. Proper stretching will prevent sprains, will prevent ruptures or tears of tendons or ligaments. So a class that focuses, if I were to teach a physical education class now, I'd spend at least 20 minutes on stretching at the start of the class and explain the why. And it makes sense. I mean, you have a child, during one summer in grade 8, I was a 5'2" child in grade 7, and then I became a 5'11" kid in grade 8. And I was extremely awkward because my muscles were tight. I wasn't used to this height, and it takes time for your muscles to accommodate to this length that you gain.
Mm-hmm.
So stretching is very important. And then finally, strengthening and conditioning. I'm not talking about the heavy weights, but just light weights or, you know, core training. You know, we hear core training a lot now, and core training is the difference between a coordinated child versus an uncoordinated child. And as we know, an uncoordinated child is more prone to injuries in general, secondary to, basic falls or slips or whatever during sports. So implementing a program where these children, while they're growing, can strengthen their core at the same time is of crucial importance.
Well, that's wonderful advice. And I don't think people in general realize the importance of stretching before doing any type of sport or physical activity or even just exercising, and how much damage can be done if you don't warm up and stretch beforehand.
No, absolutely. I mean, stretching in itself is so important. And I remember, you know, back in my day, my physical education teachers spent a lot of time on stretching, and I was amazed at how tight, you know, I was at that phase, but it did make sense. I mean, you grow so much in a short period. You know, mm-hmm. you pull muscles and tendons are forced to accommodate to it, but it doesn't mean that they're necessarily elastic because you're a child. It takes time.
Well, Dr. Raj, I wanted to also talk about if a child is playing a sport and they are injured, and it's not something like, you know, a very obvious bone sticking through the skin or something, you know, of that nature. And parents, you know, if the child has an injury and the parents are unsure of whether or not the child needs to go for medical assessment, what are some signs and symptoms they should look for? What are some ways that they can tell whether they need to seek medical help or whether it's something that they can treat at home?
You know, if they're injured at sports, you're talking about after an acute episode for an ankle sprain or a knee sprain, I mean, the first thing to do is rest your extremity and then wrap it up, ice it. Ice is always, you know, ice over heat, because ice will reduce any inflammation in the acute phase. Ice it and then elevate it. Elevate will decrease the swelling in the affected area. Try not to treat yourself, or try not to avoid it, because the most significant injuries tend to be the ones that are less obvious. So, you know, that old, you know, adage that fracture is a lot better than a bad sprain is completely true, because fractures, bones will heal. You know, the forces are dissipated through the bones. And with the sprain, you're up and trying to walk, trying to play sports again, and you're more prone to more injury. And these ligaments that are torn take a longer time to heal.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good advice. I, you know, don't think that people automatically think a fracture is so much worse. But I've known several people who have sprained an ankle and then not taken care of it properly because they didn't think that it was, you know, a serious injury. But then they re-injured themselves and ended up having to have surgery later and had multiple problems due to it. So I'm very glad that you brought that up. That's a very good point for people to know.
Exactly. I think, you know, I personally have seen my fracture patients recover a lot quicker, the full recovery, full sports, a lot quicker than, you know, a moderate sprain.
I wanted to ask you also, when it comes to children's ankles, we were told a few years ago by an orthopedic doctor that most likely, if you think your child has sprained their ankle, most likely it's actually fractured. Is that, you know, true, or was that his opinion, what he's seen in his practice? He said 90% of the time when you think a child has sprained their ankle, there's actually a fracture involved and not a sprain.
I think that's probably his opinion based on the fact that the patients he will see as an orthopedic doctor. Remember, as an orthopedic doctor, we only see the resistant cases of, you know, basic children who don't resolve, you know, from their family doctor or emergency doctor or pediatrician from their immobilization. So, you know, we don't see all the sprains. You know, a lot of times nurses will see them, family doctors, pediatricians, and they'll treat them, and thank God we don't see all those sprains, because if we saw all those sprains, we'd be overloaded. But the sprains that we get as an orthopedist are the ones that are resistant to treatment. So I think in his opinion, for his practice, for that subset of 20% of the sprains that are referred to him, I agree. Maybe a significant portion, 75 to 80% are subtle fractures. But he's not taking into account the whole spectrum of sprains,
mm-hmm.
which 80% of those he'd never see anyway.
Well, I just wanted to ask you about
that
because
right?
I was a little skeptical about that and, you know, wondered because, I don't think it's necessary to, you know, take your child in for a sprained ankle if it's mild and they're recovering at home and you know, doing well just because you're scared it's fractured. You know, of course, if it continues to have problems, then you have to go further. But I really wondered about if that was just something he saw in his practice or if that was actually medical, if there was actually, you know, research that had been done on that.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I mean, what as an orthopedist, that's exactly what he'd see the 20% of sprains that are resistant to conservative treatment from the RNs, from the family doctors, and from the pediatricians. So that's 80% that's knocked off of what he wouldn't see. Of those sprains he would see, you know, basically, I agree, a large portion of them are probably subtle fractures or growth plate injuries, which are fractures. So, you know, but in general, to say that all of, you know, he's not taking into the account of the 80% of sprains he would not see. Or, you know, and of those 80%, you don't always see a doctor. You got a smart mom at home who tells you stay off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a week later, you're better.
Well, and I wanted to also, what is your recommendation if a child has a minor injury, you know, such as a minor sprain, you know, how long should they rest that part of their body and before they start getting active again? And, you know, and if it's not feeling better by that time frame, then when should they seek, you know, should they go in and get help?
Well, you know, essentially, child has a sprained ankle. I think the first thing to do is, realistically, your symptoms should reduce significantly within 48 hours, the 72 hours. So within the first 48 to 72 hours, first thing you do is rest, ice, elevation, and compression. Basically, within that time, you should notice a significant improvement. You know, the child will say, I want to walk now. I want to get around now, you know, and you'll notice the swelling's down, bruising's down.
Mm-hmm.
If after 72 hours, you know, there's no change in the level of pain, there's no change in the level of swelling, that's your indicator where you need to get some medical help.
Okay. Well, Dr. Raj, I know that our time is up, and I don't want to keep you from your other commitments today, but I very much appreciate your joining us and giving all of the wonderful information that you've provided. And I want to share your website. I want to share with our listeners is drhipandknee.com, drhipandknee.com. And also wanted to ask you, would you pronounce your name, your last name for us?
Okay. It's easy. I'm just kidding. Raja Gopalan. So it's broken in syllables.
Raja Gopalan. Okay.
Pretty good.
Great. Well, Dr. Raj, thank you so much again for being here with us. Thank you for the information that you've provided. And I would encourage our listeners to check out your website. And have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye, Ms. Walker. Okay.
Thank you. Goodbye. We've been talking with Dr. Raj today. He is an orthopedic surgeon and has given us some great advice on what to do if our children are overloaded with their backpacks, how to keep them from getting injured, using their backpacks and how to use them properly. We also talked about sports and how to prevent sports injuries, and then also what to do if your child is injured. And I would encourage you, like I said, to go to his website, drhipandknee.com. Check that out to learn more about what he does and about the information that he has on there, because there's a lot of good information on there. And also today, I wanted to talk about just a couple of things before we go. I recently had the opportunity to try out a product that I wanted to let you know about because I enjoyed using it and will continue to use it. And I think it's just, something fun but also very useful. And it's called an X Shot. It's just the letter X, S-H-O-T, X Shot. And what it is, it's a handy little gadget that it's an extender that you can put your camera on. If you have, a pocket camera or most of the compact cameras that are available today, or if you even have, some of the small video cameras, the digital, like the Flip camera or the Vado, or, there's lots of different brands, but the very small video cameras, they will fit on this, and what it does is it allows you to take a picture of yourself, or if you want to take a picture of yourself with other people, instead of having to put your camera on a tripod or having to have someone else take the picture or doing the little awkward thing where you hold the camera out in front of you and you're trying to take it and invariably I always get my arm or, something in the picture trying to do that. And this allows you to take a picture and it looks like someone else actually held the camera for you or that you had it on a tripod. So it makes your pictures turn out a lot better in that manner. And it's an extender you attach your camera to and it telescopes out. It starts out being 9 inches in length. It's just a metal little rod, basically. Starts out 9 inches, and it's got a little adapter at the end of it to put your camera on, kind of like a little tripod adapter. And you can telescope it out at different lengths, so you can get it at the length that you want. It goes up to 37 inches, so you can get it quite a good distance. That's 3 feet away from you. And it has different angles on the adapter that you attach your camera to, so you can angle it just the way that you want it. And you just hold it out in front of you at an angle, have your camera on there. If your camera has a little self-timer where you can, set it to take the picture after a delay, then you get a great picture, and it looks like somebody else took it for you or that you had it on a tripod, and it doesn't, you don't have your arm, part of your arm getting in the picture, or, that awkwardness of, trying to get the angle just right. So it's a neat little gadget. It's called the X Shot 2.0. And like I said, you can use it for your camera or you can use it for your video camera. The lightweight ones. Now, if you have a big heavy duty big camera or a big heavy duty camcorder, they may not fit on here because it is a very lightweight device, and it's it shrinks down to 9 inches, so it's easy to carry around. You have a wrist strap, a lanyard that you can put over your wrist so that you don't drop it when your camera's attached to it and you're trying to hold it out to take your picture. So it's a neat little gadget, and I'm thankful to XShot for sending me one to review and check out because it's been a lot of fun. I got a new camera for my birthday, so I've had a lot of fun trying this out with my new camera. And you can go to XShotPix.com. So it's XShotPix.com, and learn more about the X Shot and also where you can purchase it. And it's just just a fun little gadget that I thought that you might want to know about. Also, with the camera adapter, you don't have to have a screwdriver or use a coin or anything. It just very easily attaches in, has a little knob that you turn to tighten or loosen when you're attaching it to your camera. So you don't have to spin your camera around. This takes care of it for you. And the adapter can rotate so you can get different angles. My thought was this would be kind of cool if you're in a crowd and you're, you know, like say at a concert or something, that you are in a big crowd and you're trying to get a picture of the stage. I'm very short. I'm just under 5 feet tall. And, you know, if I'm standing at a concert or in a crowd, it's hard for me to see over. And especially if I want to try to get a picture, it's very difficult. And, you know, trying to hold your camera up above the crowd can get kind of awkward. And so, you know, you can just attach this X shot to your camera and hold it up there and get a picture that way. So I think that would be a good use for it too. So check out xshotpix.com. You know, learn more about it. It's affordable. The only con that I see for it, the only downside, is I wish it folded up a little bit smaller so I could fit it in my camera case or in my purse. But it is very lightweight. It's not something that's, you know, heavy that you have to lug around. It's not real big. It's, you know, so it's not a big deal to carry it around. But if they could make it a little bit smaller to fit inside your purse or camera case, that'd be even better. But other than that, I think it's a great product. So check it out if you're into, if you like to take pictures, something to check out. And the other thing I wanted to let you know about is a contest that we have going on. If you go to the Ask Mom RN show page on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/MomRN, scroll down, look at the last blog post that I posted yesterday, I posted them on Saturday, but it's very easy to find it on the show page. We are doing a giveaway in conjunction with IMAX and Where the Wild Things Are. Where the Wild Things Are, the movie opened up over the weekend, and the IMAX version of the movie is out in theaters, and they are doing a promotion for their Facebook fans. So if you're on Facebook, you can go to their page, Where the Wild Things Are, the IMAX experience, and all the rules, all the steps for how to enter the contest are on my blog here on the Ask Mom RN Show page. But all you have to do is go to their page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/IMAX, and then fill out, become a fan there. And then also there's a link to a document that you have to fill out to enter the contest as well. And that link is on my show page on the blog. The contest is open until this coming Friday, October 23rd, at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's open to all legal U.S. residents ages 18 and older. And you can find out the information on my page. The prizes that are available that they will be giving away is for their Facebook fan contest, they are giving away a poster, a book, and a pair of IMAX movie tickets. And then there's also a giveaway for the listeners of the Ask Mom RN Show and also readers of other participating Momfluence blogs. And there's about 30 of us that are participating in this. And the prize pack that two people will win include an adult Where the Wild Things Are t-shirt, a Where the Wild Things Are kids t-shirt, a Where the Wild Things Are crown, an exclusive Where the Wild Things Are IMAX poster, a Where the Wild Things Are book, and a pair of IMAX movie tickets. So it's a pretty cool prize pack. And like I said, you can find all the information on my blog at blogtalkradio.com/momrn. Just scroll down the page until you find the IMAX Where the Wild Things Are blog post. And tonight, October 19th, from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, we have a Twitter party that you can take part in. You're invited to use the hashtag, the pound sign or hash sign, IMAX Wild Things, I-M-A-X Wild Things. And if you tweet with that hashtag from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time tonight, you will be eligible for more prizes and tickets that will be awarded during the party. And I will be a little bit late to the party, most likely, but I plan to be there at some point this evening, tweeting on, you know, for that Twitter party. So please join me for that. Enter the contest and go see the movie. I've not seen the movie yet, so I can't give you a review on it, but I've heard some good things about it. And next week, here on the Ask Mom RN show, we will be talking about the flu. Big topic, hearing lots about, I'm sure. You can't turn on the news without hearing about the flu, and of course the H1N1 flu. So we will be giving you the latest information on the H1N1 flu and the seasonal flu, ways to protect your family, ways to prevent getting the flu, what to do if you have the flu or if your children get the flu, and also information on the vaccines for both the seasonal flu and for the H1N1 virus. We'll also be talking a little bit about breast cancer. And, you know, this is October, is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You've probably been seeing the pink products all over and hearing a lot about that. So we'll also address a little bit about breast cancer awareness during next week's show. And we're going to go ahead and end a little bit early today. I'm very thankful to you for joining us. I look forward to talking with you again next week. And we have some great shows coming up in the future weeks. So please tune in. And this is Tamara Walker, otherwise known as Mom RN, thanking you for listening to the Ask Mom RN show. Have a fabulous week. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.